Welcome to The Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth, best-selling author and co-creator of PaleoParents.com, where we focus on real-life solutions for families seeking health.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times best-selling author and creator of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
And we're back. Look, I'm addressing you, listeners, once again. I'm so proud of myself. I'm like patting myself on the head. Matt and I have this phrase where we kind of mock each other and the children when you're asking for praise of something that
you should have been able to do for the first 250 episodes, but it took you 250 episodes to be able to do this.
I'm patting myself on the back because, you know, there's nothing wrong with being proud of yourself each and every time you do something you're proud of. So, hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I do not mind at all when you say hello to the listeners first. I think it's awesome.
Well, it is kind of why we're here. I mean,
it's true.
I could call or text, but I mean, text is kind of how we mostly communicate to the world who needs to know. Two busy ladies. That's kind of, we have opposite schedules. You work during the day. Yeah. I do this work at night. So it's, you know, we could do that anytime.
But sometimes have the, like, the text, like I'm kind of always surprised if I text you and I get immediate reply. I'm like, whoa, look at this. Our schedule's aligned today. We have like the 3-day long conversations because there's like 9-hour breaks between the text reply. Yeah. No, I think, you know, it's one of the things that we don't get to do. You know, I'm in my pajamas. I don't know if you're in your pajamas, but I'm in my pajamas.
Of course I am.
In my dark office. I have no lights on because circadian rhythms.
That reminds me.
Yeah.
Okay. You can finish and then I'm going to tell you something.
Okay. I don't know. You already broke my train of thought. It's fine.
So completely off topic. I purchased myself a pair of computer glasses for my birthday. Have you heard of Felix Grace? This is not sponsored, by the way. I paid for these glasses and you don't even know that I was bringing this up for you. Have you heard of them before?
No.
So they are specifically made to help reduce glare, block blue light, and you can even get them magnified if you want. And they're made for people who stare at computers all day long. And I have been using them for about 2 weeks now. I swear by them. When I'm looking at a computer and I don't have them on now, I can feel the eye strain. They are amazing and I would highly recommend that you look into them. And they're also nice looking blue light blocking glasses for those who want. They're not cheap, just to warn you. And I've tried to find them on Amazon and other sites, but I don't mind supporting a brand that's doing something great. And so I bought myself a pair for my birthday and I've left them at work, but then I ordered myself two more pairs so that I could like have one in my purse and one at home. Like I just love them so much. So
I have a couple pairs of Swannies, which are sort of another brand of blue blocking glasses that are designed to not look dorky. And I also do the same, like, I have my one pair downstairs, my one pair upstairs, but that way I always have a pair for my suitcase as well. So it's like, when I first started wearing melatonin glasses or amber tinted glasses, like I was wearing like a $3 pair of safety glasses, and switching to these sort of, they're higher tech and they're much more selective in the wavelengths they cut out. And I find that it's weird because they're not prescription glasses, but they feel like putting prescription glasses on. Like I feel in the evenings, like I can see, if I look outside, I can see much more clearly, which I can't explain the physiology of why that's happening, but, they're comfortable and another, also not sponsored at all by this podcast, which has nothing to do with circadian rhythms at all, You're just trying to avoid talking about poop, aren't you?
I don't know what you're talking about. That doesn't make me weird and uncomfortable at all.
You know, I feel like it's been a while since we've covered a topic that makes you feel uncomfortable.
I'm literally rubbing my face right now.
I wish this was a video podcast right now so that I could see you not making eye contact with me.
I know. I just moved my face away from the screen and started rubbing my face with my hand. Like, oh gosh, what's coming next?
You know, we actually have a whole collection of gut health related questions in our inbox to get to on the podcast. And one of the things that I wanted to do was I was trying to look through them to pick topics that I felt like we maybe hadn't covered in detail on the podcast before. And I almost felt like there's like a whole new gut health series here. So I picked one today to kind of start that ball rolling, maybe in a little bit different direction, but I think there's probably at least, I mean, I have a lot of questions, and one of the things that we do on this show is we try to pick representative questions. So if we don't pick your question specifically, it's because we had three questions on the same topic and we picked the one that sort of covered the most bases, or that said the nicest things about us. That's also definitely a factor.
At least we're honest.
Yeah. I mean, I can't help it. If you say nice things about me, I'm going to like your question. It's just human nature, I think. So I felt like I hadn't made you feel uncomfortable about talking about bowel movements for a while. But also, you know, we really do have, a large number of questions on this topic. And I think it's because the topic is so taboo, to sort of talk about, you know, like I don't go pick up my kids at the bus stop and say to my neighbor, so how'd your poop look today? Right? Like that's not something we talk about in public. And so I think one of the things that happens with that is it becomes a little bit more challenging to get information in terms of what's normal. And when you don't know if what you're experiencing is normal, then it's really hard to determine whether or not you need to change something or talk to your doctor, right? It can be something that's really hard to talk about. And really challenging to find useful information about. So we're going to try, Stacy's embarrassment aside, try and tackle that a little bit today. And we're going to talk about BMs.
Is the title of the show Everybody Poops?
It could be. if I'm it's not taken for a podcast title, right?
All right. I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right. So, again, I'm going to apologize if I am mispronouncing this person's name incorrectly. I'm going to say Genia. Genia says, how do you tell if you have an unhealthy gut? What are the best things that I can start doing right now to start working on my gut health? I'm very new to paleo and there's a lot of information out there. Thank you for any info or tips. I'm also slowly catching up on listening to your podcast. What do you think are the best episodes for a newbie to listen to first? Not the first one with Mark Sisson is what I'm going to say. Not that one.
I hope that that just inspires everybody to go listen to it.
Oh my gosh. Oh, where I turned into a giggly high schooler. Oh, so many ways that was embarrassing. Do you want to answer the second part of that question first? For like anybody else who's maybe finding this podcast, who's kind of new to paleo, like where in the podcast would you direct them to as noobs?
Sure. So I think, if you do a search for, gut recovery, I think, especially, talking about how to heal after, you've been exposed, like, because if you're a newbie, then you have, quote unquote, been exposed. We talk a lot about kind of gut healing techniques and that kind of stuff on those podcasts. Matt can put a link in the show notes. So I would suggest, I really liked the shows that we did in particular with Stephanie Ruper and Denise Minger. I think that we go into some good kind of emotional approaches with making sure that you're approaching paleo from a healthy mindset, and also kind of the history behind the whys of paleo with Denise Minger. And then I would say definitely with Sarah and I, the Paleo 101 series, which ended up going into 102 and maybe more than that.
It was 3-4 parts.
I don't know if it was like 101, 102, 201, 202, like college style, or
I don't remember.
Like did part one, part two, whatever. But those are definitely out there, and we'll put the links in the show notes for you.
We've done a lot of podcasts. That's I think what we're trying to say right there. There's a lot, and they're not all good, folks. And sometimes Sarah turns into a giggly high schooler and fangirls all over the guest.
Not just, always. I not feel always. Like by the time Mark was on, what, the third time, it was totally fine.
I think I was cool by the second time. Come on. The first time, though, that he was our first, I think, like really like high profile guest. And this was before I'd had a chance to meet like other paleo bloggers and authors in person. So it was before I'd been to a conference, like, now I've, you know, had meals with these people and long conversations, and they're actually real people to me now. But at that time they were like, oh my gosh, we're talking with Mark Sisson. So there you go. So to get into, I think, the first part of this question, which is, how do you know if your gut is healthy? I have a blog post called 5 Gut Health Tests You Can Do at Home, and I'm going to sort of summarize the information in that. This information is also coming in Paleo Principles, but we can put a link to this post in the show notes. And what at-home gut health tests can do is basically give you a sense of whether or not I need to talk about this with a doctor. And so the first, I think, place is a symptom checklist. So if you have what could be called gastrointestinal symptoms, mild and occasional, that's not a big deal. But when they're persistent, if it's every day or every time you eat a certain food, these are things that can indicate that there's an underlying problem that's worth addressing. So this would include things like gas, bloating, belching after meals. It would include constipation, diarrhea, or alternating between the two. It would include indigestion, heartburn, bad breath can be included in here. Pain or straining while passing a bowel movement. And then also, one of the things that I think can tell you a lot about gut health is looking at your stool. So, for example, undigested food in your stool can indicate that there's an issue. Mucus in your stool can indicate that there's an issue. Blood in your stool, if it's dark and it's clotted, get thee to a doctor. If it's brightly colored, that typically comes from anal fissures. That's not as serious a problem, but it still
you
indicates.
See my face right now. I'm like, I'm sorry.
I just said anal fissures for you.
Deep breaths.
Poor Stacy. I didn't make you say it though. Sorry. But that is still indicative of something that can be fixed. It's just not as serious a condition. Or if there's copious amounts of blood, even if it's brightly colored, again, get thee to a doctor. So symptoms, I think, is sort of the first thing. Like, do you feel something gastrointestinal wise that you notice, right? Like, healthy digestion just happens, right? You don't notice stomach aches. You don't notice bloating or, you know, flatulence. Those aren't things that you're like, if those things are not there, you don't notice anything. So are you noticing things that maybe are embarrassing or causing you to have that idea at the back of your head going, something's not right here. Bowel movement frequency can tell you a lot about gut health. What is considered normal is a fairly wide range. Anywhere between 3 times a day to 3 times a week is generally considered perfectly normal. Although I would say 3 times per week is probably not great. It probably should be at least once a day. I know that Dr. Jeff Leach, who is one of my heroes and somebody I would still fangirl over if I got to talk to him, he's one of the people behind the Human Gut Project and the Human Food Project. He has been quoted as saying that, you know, you should be going several times a day, and at least one of them should be a Whopper. That's his language, and I love it. And
do you understand, like, okay, so here's the thing is I 100% agree. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. I feel great. It didn't used to be that way, but I can think back to the moments where I can identify with this. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? But you know what? Here's the thing. I'm going to for those of you who are having moments like me, here's what I tell myself is, like, we are the only animals in the world that think that this natural body function is, you know, off-putting or embarrassing or whatever terms we want to use. Like, I was thinking about this the other day when I had this, like, really stressful situation, and I had this huge rush of adrenaline and all this like these hormone rushes, and it reminded me of, because as soon as things calmed down, I immediately needed to go to the bathroom, and it reminded me, I think we talked about it here on this podcast once before, about how a zebra, when it's being chased by a lion or a tiger or whatever, like, defecates itself while it's running. It's an adrenaline response to get everything out and be ready. And so I'm like, okay, Stacy, like, if that zebra can be running and being chased and just, like, poop while it's just running, because that's what's going to save its life. Like, you can handle talking about this right now. So I'm sorry.
You can.
I'm just going to keep biting my fist and stop interrupting you with my immaturity.
It's funny because, like, as I know I'm about to say a word that's going to embarrass you, like, I know it's coming at the end of this sentence, and I have this, like, little bit of, like, 7-year-old boy glee inside me that goes, hey, I'm about to say a naughty poop word. And then I know it's coming. And I just, again, I'm lamenting over the lack of video conversation right now, because it would be epic. So the next thing is really visual inspection. So there's such a thing called the Bristol Stool Form Scale. This is what medical professionals would use to evaluate stool quality. And there's 7 types. Type 1 is hard. It's small. It's sort of described typically as, like, small, hard lumps like nuts and hard to pass. This would be extreme constipation. Type 2 is, you're going to love this one, sausage-shaped but lumpy. This is also considered abnormal, considered constipation. type 3 is also like a sausage, but with cracks on the surface. This may or may not be normal. This is sort of borderline between ideal and constipation. So once in a while, not a big deal. Consistently, probably not a good thing. Type 4 is ideal. This is the description from medical textbooks, okay? Like a sausage or snake, smooth and soft. Poor Stacy.
I'm totally fine.
Totally fine. Keep describing stools. Yep. All right. Type 5, it's also now we're getting into the borderline between ideal and diarrhea. Sometimes perfectly normal, consistently maybe not a good thing. Soft blobs with clear-cut edges that pass easily. Type 6, fluffy pieces with ragged edges and very mushy. Type 7, watery, no solid pieces, entirely liquid. So type 6 and type 7 are diarrhea. Type 5 is maybe a little bit softer than ideal, but probably okay. Type 4 is this ideal. So one of the things that you can do is just when you go to the bathroom, look in the toilet when you're done. That can tell you a whole lot about how your digestive health is. So you're looking at stool quality using the Bristol Stool Form Scale. You're looking to see if there's undigested particles in the stool. If you ate something really challenging to diagnose, right, the classic would be corn. I know that's not a paleo food, but that's a really good example that most people can relate to. You're not going to worry about that. But if you're seeing like bits of carrot from the stew you had in your stool, like you didn't digest that and you really should have. So looking for things that are, if you're seeing particles of foods that should have been digested, that should definitely be setting off some alarm bells. And then consistent floaters can also be an issue. There's this sort of popular belief that floaters are caused by undigested fats. That has been debunked in scientific studies. It's usually caused by excess gas, which, you know, floaters once in a while is totally fine. Sort of the consistent floaters, especially when there's other GI symptoms present, that's a problem. It can also be caused by infections, by pancreatic diseases, gallbladder diseases, and some other health conditions. So that's why if it's consistently floaters, and especially if there's other GI symptoms, that's a good time to go see a doctor. And then the last test that you can sort of do at home is called a transit time test. And this will give you a sense of how long it takes, right? It's measuring how long it takes between when you eat the food and when the waste of that meal is eliminated. And what you would typically do is eat something that's hard to digest, like corn. So this test is sometimes done with eating a cup of cooked corn kernels, which I would only recommend if you know for certain that corn is not a problematic food for you. You can also do it with sesame seeds. So you would take like a tablespoon of sesame seeds and mix it into a glass of water and swallow the seeds whole. Or you could also do it with a cup of beets, either cooked or raw, shredded, and you eat just the beets. Like you eat just the sesame seeds, just the corn, just the beets. And you basically wait until you see sesame seeds or corn or the characteristic beet red stool in the toilet. And you look at how many hours that is. Optimal transit time is considered to be between 12 and 48 hours, which is a pretty big spread. So faster than that indicates that things are moving through your digestive system too fast. You're probably not absorbing all of the nutrients from it. It can be an indicator of some kinds of gut dysbiosis. Longer times indicate that things are moving really sluggishly. That can also indicate gut dysbiosis problems, particularly overgrowth. It can indicate insufficient stomach acid, pancreatic enzymes, gallbladder function. So longer than 72 hours is definitely considered constipation. Even if your bowel movement frequency is normal, if your transit time is longer than 72 hours, that's considered constipation. And that's definitely worth talking to a doctor. Now, what a doctor will do, they might do the like medical version of these tests. So like transit time, they'd have you swallow a dye, or they might give you some kind of marker that would show up on an x-ray. So they have the like fancy version of this test. Bristol stool form is still a thing that they would do. Symptoms checklists are still things that they would do. They would still ask you questions, but they can do things like colonoscopies, hydrogen methane breath tests, endoscopies. They can do biopsies. They can do stool analysis and look at look for parasites, or look for functional medicine or integrative medicine practitioner might do stool analysis and look for gut dysbiosis, overgrowths. They might be looking for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or candida overgrowth. And those are definitely things that people tend to self-diagnose based on symptoms. You really need to do a test for those. They can do then. There's a quite an extensive collection of testing that can be done to sort of narrow in on what the issue is. But sometimes the issue is I need to change how I eat. And I think it's worthwhile at least briefly answering the part of this question that is like, what are the things that I can start doing now to start working on my gut health? So let's assume no gut pathologies, so no things that require medical intervention. So just a suboptimal gut health related to diet and lifestyle, and not a thing that means you need a doctor's medical care. So I know this is now we're into better territory, right? Right, Stacey?
I've been good. But yes, I'm comfortable here.
The two factors from the scientific literature that have the strongest corrective influence on the type and numbers and variety of gut bacteria living in our digestive tracts is basically vegetable consumption, also fruit, but it's the fiber from fruit and vegetables and the type of fats that we eat, specifically omega-3 fats. So there's studies showing that ramping up vegetable consumption can correct gut dysbiosis problems in as little as 3 days. You can also dramatically improve the type of bacteria growing in your gut by adding fish oil. There's studies, I would suggest actual fish, but there's studies use fish oil. That takes 14 days. But really, to have healthy gut bacteria, they like us to eat a lot of vegetables and fruit, whole fruits and vegetables. So it's specifically the type of fiber that's in that. It's very different from the type of fiber in grains because it has a lot more antioxidants in it. And antioxidants, just like they're sort of anti-inflammatory, anti-aging for us, they are for our gut bacteria as well. So vegetables and fruit, studies are showing 8 servings a day or more is the target that we should all be searching for. If you look at the USDA recommendations for fiber intake, it's 25 grams a day for women, 30 to 38 grams a day for men. Hunter-gatherers eat more like 50 to 200 grams of fiber a day. So the more fiber, the better, and a variety of fiber. So you're going to get fiber from you're going to get a mix of insoluble and soluble fiber from any vegetable or fruit that you eat, but you're going to get more insoluble from non-starchy vegetables and more soluble from starchy vegetables and fruit. So a mix is definitely the way to go. And if you're having trouble, I think we talked about this just a few podcasts ago, if you're having trouble digesting that, going to cooked vegetables, soups, stews, also pureed like smoothies, that can help with digestion. So vegetables, fruit, fats. So high omega-3s, the best way to get that is from just eating seafood. But also lower saturated fat. So sticking in that, hunter-gatherer range of 10 to 15% of total calories from saturated fat as a maximum, that will also help improve the gut bacteria. So we know that when your saturated fat intake creeps up too high, we actually create an environment where undesirable strains of bacteria want to grow in our gut. And we also increase the amount of endotoxin that gets into our bloodstream when we eat a lot of saturated fat. So as much as paleo is not scared of saturated fat, that does not mean eating sticks of butter for breakfast. So those are the things from you know, scientific studies show are the strongest corrective influences on gut bacteria. Eating fermented foods is also considered very beneficial just from a exposure to new strains. So it can help with variety. So a wild fermented sauerkraut, for example, can have up to 680 some odd strains of probiotic organisms in it. An ideal gut would have between 500 and 1,000 different strains. So that's a great way to re-inoculate the gut, especially if you've ever been on antibiotics in your entire life, which most of us have. So fermented foods. And then from a gut barrier perspective, out of the box, paleo is going to do great things in terms of getting rid of the most inflammatory compounds. Bone broth, right? Glycine-rich foods can be very, very helpful. Coconut oil can be very, very helpful for improving gut health. And then doing what you can to improve gut bacteria. And there's some interesting nutrients. Did we talk about this recently? Nutrients that can help help the tight junction formation in the epithelial cells?
Nutrients? No, I don't think so.
I think I maybe did this in a summit interview. So there was a really interesting paper that I happened upon when I was researching for Paleo Principles that looked at some nutrients that actually help tight junction formation. So that's the one of the connections between the cells that form the small intestinal wall. And so when that connection is loose, that is one way that we can have a leaky gut. And so one of the compounds was short chain fatty acids, which are created from fermentation of fiber by gut bacteria. So that was one important link. A few of them were antioxidant phytochemicals. So like quercetin, which you would get from like apples and onion family, berberine, which might be a little bit harder to get from fruits and vegetables. But you know, unless you live in the Pacific Northwest and you can eat Oregon grape. And I can't remember what the other one was, but zinc was another really important one. And most of us are zinc deficient. So if you look at standard American diet, something like 73% of people are not ever getting the RDA of zinc. So highest zinc foods are shellfish, like oysters, especially the bivalves, oysters, mussels, clams. So then you hit the omega-3 whammy and the zinc whammy. And glycine, actually. So shellfish are also pretty high in glycine. So you hit all the good nutrients for gut health. So those are some good places to start. So more seafood, more vegetables, more fermented food, maybe add some broth and a little bit of, don't go crazy with the coconut oil. And those are kind of like the starter gut health foods.
I don't know that I would call them starters for starters. Everybody. I think some people would think that, let's say, oysters, for example, were advanced. Whereas you and me, we'll go to a restaurant and eat 5 bajillion and love them. That's not everybody's cup of tea. But I do think it's important for people to consider, first of all, how much these things all play in. But second of all, don't get overwhelmed by all of this. Like, if you're new, there are so many things that we talk about here on the podcast that go into health overall. You can't possibly either learn it all or do it all immediately. Even us, we are constantly evolving and changing our lifestyle in order to optimize health. That's just the nature of living. I think if you're, you know, taking in the science and you're learning what your body's reactions are and all that kind of stuff, like, it's just going to constantly change no matter what you do. But there are things to prioritize when it comes to optimizing your health. And I think nutrient density is one of those things that we talked about. Gosh, I wish I knew which show it was, but I think it might have been when like Real Life Paleo was coming out or something like that, where one of the things that we talked about was the prioritization of nutrient density is even more so than kind of removing some foods. Like adding those nutrients into your diet can be more beneficial than even removing things like, let's say, gluten-free oats and rice, if you're talking about, you know, most people, right? So not to say that those things aren't going to also help you, but in the scheme of how to prioritize your health, thinking about things from the perspective of, as I've tried to phrase it before, is this food helping my health? Is this food hurting my health? Or is this food neutral? And I think there is a neutral. There is this like gray area neutral food. And I would describe white rice as that for me, right? Like it's neither hurting me, like I don't have a bad reaction to it, but it's also not helping my health. It's kind of one of those like meh kind of foods. And I know for Sarah, she can do corn. I can't. Corn hurts my health, but it's neutral to her. So learning what those foods are and then trying to operate as much as you can in this environment of what foods help my health without eating the foods that hurt your health, or at least very, very minimally. And think of the, you know, 20% or whatever as that gray area. At least that's how I try to optimize. It's not to say that I'm perfect and I do that all the time, but it's certainly what I strive for. I mean, I, you know, recently told you that I did a Harry Potter weekend where I had butter beer and ice cream. So, you know, like, was that helping my health? No. But it was enjoyable and it was an experience and I don't have guilt or regrets. It's just like, oh, this is not the best thing for me. And so this week I've prioritized vegetables, broth, collagen, and nutrient density in the foods that Sarah listed off to kind of reframe my health. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, I think what I tried to do was list the optimal diet from a gut health perspective. I think it's important to remember as you are just starting paleo that it is okay to take things in baby steps. If you are like the typical American and you eat 1.5 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables a day, jumping up to 8 is going to be potentially pretty overwhelming. So you can look at that as, well, how do I add a half serving every couple of days, or how do I add a serving a week, and slowly build up to that point? Where can I add more fresh fruits and vegetables? I mean, that can be, I think one of the sort of, biggest bang for our bucks in terms of diet changes can be just adding in more vegetables, but it can be a real challenge for people depending on where they're starting from. I forget that not everyone likes oysters because I've always liked them.
I know.
Some people don't even
like Brussels sprouts. To me, that sounds like blasphemy, but we have to remember that not everybody starts at the same place, you know?
That's true. Yeah. It's easy for me. I've noticed I didn't say organ meat in any of that. It's easy for me to remember that people don't like organ meat, but I forget about oysters because they're...
I mean, if she went back to the way, way beginning of our show, she would know that that was something that even you had to adjust to.
I had a hard time with that. And now it's so natural that I even like sometimes I go, well, how many times this week have we had something with organ meat in it? Like I just throw it into everything. But that was definitely a intentional problem that I set out to solve in my family was how was I going to figure that out and get to a point where everybody would eat organ meat without complaining. So, yeah. I think that's a good place to at least start this discussion on gut health. I think I would like to emphasize, we've emphasized this before. While I think that finding friends who are not averse to discussing for example, gastrointestinal symptoms and stool quality with can be really, really wonderful. It is not appropriate to text or email or message toilet pictures, pictures of your BMs to anybody, including us. If you really feel like you need to show your BM to somebody, you may take a picture into your doctor's office. And even then, your doctor may or may not want to see it. I think you should preface, I have a picture if you would like to see it, and let your doctor make that determination. So I do want to emphasize that as much as we need to break through some of the stigma associated with this, there are certain lines that the world is just not ready to cross, and that's definitely one of them.
Especially me. Please don't DM me or tag me, even to joke around. It just, like, you know, ruins my day. So here's the thing that I would say to you, since our listener is new and maybe we have some people who haven't, you know, heard this before, but my intestinal gut health was saved by friends who were willing to say to me after I used the restroom, let me try to step back a little bit. I was sharing a house with a bunch of paleo bloggers for the very first Paleo FX, and they all went out to do something, whatever it was. And I was using the restroom and nobody was in the house. So I didn't courtesy flush. And, you know, I was super stressed out from traveling. And at the time I did not have healthy gut health because I hadn't learned how to properly digest food without a gallbladder. And I was eating too much fat for what my body can digest and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, I had this everybody out type movement, which I had every day, which is not healthy. It is not how your friend describes his magical movements. And it was also really stinky, which I think is another indication that things aren't going so great. You know, I'm not just talking, I mean, obviously it's nobody's going to smell like roses, but, like, you know, sometimes when you eat something that doesn't agree with you, it's like, whoa, that was a doozy. It was a doozy in the bathroom, and they all happened to come home when I was leaving the restroom, and this house that we were renting was, you know, it was obvious what had happened anyway. And they said to me, like, this doesn't smell healthy. This doesn't smell normal. What do you have going on? And we talked about it, and I explained how my movements were. And I did not show a picture, but we talked about it. And that's how I started looking more into and then worked with a practitioner to figure out exactly what was going on and how to resolve it. And for years, I took supplements and I worked on improving my gut health and, you know, not having a gallbladder and also having been a vegetarian for so long and not having really good stomach acid from both of those things was causing a lot of digestive issues. And to look back on it now, I'm like, whoa, I can't believe how bad it was, because now I don't take supplements and I know what I need to do to maintain good gut health and blah, blah, blah. So I would say that the emphasis that you gave about, you know, having people to talk to is really important, because if someone hadn't mentioned to me that it was concerning, like, that's just kind of how I was living my life, you know. That's how my movements have been. What are you talking about? Like, this is my normal.
I had irritable bowel syndrome for most of my life. I wasn't diagnosed until my early 20s, and it had to get so bad that I was in the ER with sharp abdominal pain because I hadn't had a bowel movement in 2 weeks. Like, I didn't have conversations with my family or my friends about bowel habits. I had no idea that I was chronically constipated for years until it hit crisis point. So I think that that's a fairly common experience, you know, no matter what, you know, community you're part of, that we tend to normalize everything when it comes to bowel habits and not realize that there's, you know, changes that we can make, whether that's diet changes or supplements or, you know, going through some diagnostics to be able to actually solve those problems.
Awesome. Well, I know that there was a lot that we threw out. So hopefully Janaya is comfortable and confident with picking up some of these things. Do not feel like you need to take them all on. And that goes for everybody. You know, make sure that when you're starting this, it's at a pace that can be sustainable for you. We never want to encourage everybody to do so much that they become overwhelmed and just quit. So any little step that you make is progress, and be proud of that. And once you're comfortable with something, then, you know, add the next thing on your list to it when you're ready. But I wish everybody the best of luck if you're, you know, starting over or starting fresh or whatever the case may be. Thanks for tuning in and listening this week. We'll be back again next week, as always, perhaps with some science from Sarah about the stuff we talked about last week, maybe.
Oh, really? I'm filming all week this week.
Okay.
I'm going to be like curling my hair.
Priorities.
I'm pretty sure you're gonna have to give me like another week after this week is gonna be, this could be some long days.
We can have patience. We can, okay. It's worth waiting for.
Excellent. Thank you. We'll be back next week with something light and fluffy that's not type 6 stool.
Excellent.
I needed to drop the mic there for that one. Like,
really?
Okay. Oh, man. It was worth a try. Well, we will definitely be back next week with some kind of topic. And
less awkward, maybe.
Maybe, with fewer silly jokes. And in the meantime, remember, if you enjoyed this episode, we love all of your reviews on iTunes, and it helps other people find the podcast. And remember that you can support us by making purchases through the links on our websites. That's one of the ways that we keep this podcast ad-free. Although we did kind of have our little free plugs for products at the top of this one.
It's because we're idiots and we don't reach out to these companies.
We should be clearly charging for that. But anyways, love your support, listeners, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
And that awkward silence means the episode's over. I like how you pronounced the questioner's name completely different from how I pronounced it.
I knew somebody with that name, so oh, I pronounced it that way.
Janaya?
Yeah, she pronounced it Janaya. It was she. I think she was like of Scandinavian descent.
Maybe we need like a phonetic pronunciation of your name box on the form.
I think that's taking things a bit too seriously.